Hey everybody, what's going on? Hopefully everybody's having a good Monday.
Yep.
Monday, and that means it's movie time. Yeah, I have actually been wanting to do this movie for a very long time. I hadn't pulled the trigger on it before because even though Tom loves Christopher Nolan, every time I told him that this movie was in reverse order, he was always kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't like any kind of tedious, convoluted bullshit. I like a pretty direct and fucking what's a good way to what's a good way to put it?
You like it's just a straightforward.
Yeah, real direct and straightforward kind of storytelling. This one is about the main character. He can't form any. He took a head injury and he can't form any short-term memories.
That's called anterograde
Yeah,
amnesia.
so
It's a real thing when
every
people.
10 or 15 minutes he's forgotten what's happened.
That would be a hellish fuck.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be for you because it's like you wouldn't really remember from time to
Right.
time, but
So he's got to fucking write shit down, take pictures of things, and he's even tattooed messages to himself on his arm to remember what happened. And somebody raped and murdered his wife and they shot him and it gave him a head. I think it was he got shot, didn't he? Or was he just hit in the
No, he
head?
got slammed against
Slammed
the
against what? Yeah, and
mirror.
it gave him a head injury. And that's what's giving him this head, this weird memory problem. And he worked as a insurance investigator, so he's doing the investigation. He's trying to track down the woman, the guy who killed his wife. And but he's trying to he's got to do it without any memory. So the movie's kind of told in reverse order. So you are just as discombobulated as he is. It's pretty good.
Which is a genius fucking
Yeah.
idea. And I mean, the whole thing, here's the thing. And this is gonna necessitate spoilers,
Yeah.
because you can't really discuss the movie without talking about spoilers. And I feel like maybe some people haven't seen this, but I kind of feel like most people that are really into Christopher Nolan have probably seen it. It's only his second movie, and it was his first big studio movie. It came out back in 2000, at least at festivals. Then it was released in 2001, like in a wider release. But I actually saw this in the theater when it came out, and I fucking loved it. And the thing about it is that the whole thing, and I don't know if you realized this while you were watching it, the whole thing isn't in reverse order. The black and white scenes are linear,
Okay.
chronological, forward,
All right.
like the in between, like interstitials. All the color scenes are shot. Obviously, the scenes aren't filmed backwards, they're just in backwards order. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? And the reason that he did that, because I kind of feel like even when this came out, this got almost universal acclaim even back when it came out, because the more times you see it, I think this, we watched it last night, and I think this is my third viewing. I saw it in the theater when it came out, and then I think I saw it maybe a year or two later, like on DVD or whatever, and then I'd been wanting to rewatch it to see if it was as good as I remembered, and it totally is. It's actually better than I remembered. And the thing about it is that when you tell people it's like, oh, all the scenes are in reverse order, you'd think it would be hard to follow it, but it's really not. I mean, I didn't find it difficult to follow even the first time I watched it. Once you understand that that's what's going on, you can, the reason that he did it, I kind of feel like some critics at the time were like, oh, it was just a gimmick, but it's like it wasn't a gimmick. He was doing it for a
He was
purpose.
trying to make you as fucking discombobulated as the main character. He was operating in the dark.
Yeah,
He
he's
didn't.
basically in a constant present.
Yeah, and so every time something happens, you see it from his point of view. The thing is, you don't have the backstory or the context.
But
Then
neither
neither
does
does
he.
he.
Neither
So
does
then it
he.
shows you a flashback, basically, of before, and then how that stage of the story went. And you go, oh, okay. So this is how he got to where the first scene that you saw.
Yeah.
The first thing you see him do in the movie is kill a dude.
Yeah.
He kills a dude.
Teddy.
Yeah, shoots him in the back of the head. He's looking at pictures of it to make sure that he did it. It's weird because he didn't want to forget that he did it.
Yeah.
And written all over him, and tattooed all over him, are things about who did it, the dude's name, He's got photographs. It's like, you know, don't believe this guy. He's full of shit. And he's so he's reading, and so you just know what he knows.
Yeah.
Well, when you get to the end of the movie, you see where what all caused this shit. You see how many mistakes this dude was making because he didn't have the context, because he didn't have any memory of what had happened before. So he'd write shit down for himself and send a message to himself in the future. But by then, he's acting on good faith, believing, well, I wrote it, so I must have been telling the truth. And no, he wasn't telling the truth then.
Well, that's kind of...
he didn't know what the reality was.
Right. That's kind of the thing, and that's what makes it interesting. Like, as the movie goes on, it's like you not only find out that everybody around him is manipulating him for their own purposes because he doesn't remember shit, but you find out at the end that he's also deluding himself.
Yeah.
So no one is entirely sure what really happened. You know what I mean? Because he's kind of like, when you get to the end, he very deliberately... you know, the end, which is kind of the beginning, he very deliberately wrote down Teddy's license plate number in the moment, knowing this is going to be my next John G.
Yeah.
So he's making a conscious decision
to kill that dude.
To kill that guy because he's like, well, I'm not going to remember.
Yeah.
You know, because he knows he's not going to remember.
Yeah, he's lying to himself in the future.
Right.
Although sometimes I don't think he's lying. I think he really doesn't know because he can't remember what had happened 10 minutes prior to him when he's writing something down. So every time he writes something down as a message to himself, that opinion he's writing down is only 10 minutes old.
Right.
He doesn't have any memory before that. So he doesn't have the context of what's going on when he's writing that shit down. So all of the shit he's writing to himself for the future is inaccurate.
Yeah.
So he's in a fucking total tailspin. He's just going on instinct.
Which
is a good flick.
I mean...
Because you start off thinking, oh man, he's the good guy. You're kind of rooting for him. And then as the movie goes on, you're like, no, this dude's fucking crazy. He has no idea what he's doing. he's making shit up as he's going along.
And he's by necessity.
Yeah, because he doesn't know. And he's killing people. He thinks for a good reason, but no, he's got the wrong people a lot of times.
And that, like I said, a lot of that, some of it is his own delusion, but some of it is people around him, like I said, manipulating him for their own ends, like, because it's like, hey, we want this person out of the way or this person killed, and he'll do it because he won't even remember.
He won't remember.
You know what I mean? So it's just, it's such a great, like, when you watch it the first time, you're just kind of like, wow, this is like a really good, like, innovative, you know, it's essentially just a revenge story, kind of, like, at least on the surface, almost kind of like a neo-noir. But the more you watch it and the more you study the way that he constructed it, it's kind of like almost like a thematic analysis of how memory works and how self-delusion works.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, that like they talked to a bunch of experts on anterograde amnesia, because that is a real thing. Like you can get a head injury and it makes you not able to form new memories. Obviously, it's a crippling. You can't really live like that.
No, you need assisted living.
Yeah, you'd have to be in assisted living. Because, you know, all kind of bad things could happen. But
you live only in the present. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you don't have any memory of anything, that could go very, very badly very quickly. But all the experts that watched this movie said this is the most accurate movie representation of not only anterograde amnesia, but amnesia in general. They're like, this is pretty much how it works. Because, you know, whenever a lot of times, you know, movies have amnesia in them and they don't, you know, it's either played for laughs or they played it. It's like not accurate. They said this is pretty accurate. And it's like, and even the way that the movie is shot in the reverse order, like where at the beginning of the scene, you know, he wakes up and he's at a bathroom somewhere holding an empty liquor bottle. And he's like, I don't feel drunk. Like he doesn't know how he got there and he doesn't know what he's doing. And he's like, that's pretty much how these people live. That's pretty much how it works. So the fact that Christopher Nolan... just came up with that. Well, here's the thing. Okay, so the story about the backstory of this. The idea for the story actually came from Christopher Nolan's brother, Jonathan, who is a writer. And they were on a road trip or something, and he says, hey, Christopher, I have this cool idea for a short story I'm thinking about writing. And he kind of pitched, you know, he's like, here's a guy, and he has anterograde amnesia, and he's trying to find the person who killed his wife. And so he kind of elaborated on a little bit. And Christopher Nolan is like, oh man, that's a great idea. Do you mind if I develop a screenplay from that? He's like, sure, go ahead. So they're both like on either side of the country. His brother is writing a short story based on the idea, and Christopher Nolan is writing a script based on the idea. They ended up being similar, but a lot different. I think in the short story version, Leonard, the main character, is actually like in a mental hospital, you know, and he busts out later and, you know, goes to find the person that killed his wife. So there's like some differences there, but the thing about it was that when they made this movie, this, like I said, this was only Christopher Nolan had made one movie prior to this, which is called Following, which I've only seen once, and I remember liking it. It was a long time ago. It was very low budget. But this was his first kind of big studio movie. I think it cost $9 million to make. It, like, went around some festivals and stuff in Europe, and they just thought it was fucking great over there. It got, like, standing ovations and stuff like that. Had no problem at all, like, getting distribution in Europe. But of course, when it came to the United States, most companies passed on it because they said they thought it was too confusing. And it's like I said, I kind of feel like a lot of big movie studios think that Americans are dumb. So they're just kind of...
Well, they're not totally wrong.
Well, they're not totally wrong either. But yeah, so like no one's going to understand this. It's too confusing. It's, we're like, we recognize that it's a great movie, but nobody's going to go see it because it's too confusing. But a company called New Market picked it up and distributed it, and to everyone's surprise, it was actually quite a big hit. It made $40 million, which they weren't expecting at all, and like I said, it was pretty fairly low budget, so it was actually a success, and obviously became a cult favorite later on, well, and it got a couple of Oscar nominations.
It's also good writing, and it's good acting. You don't need a big budget.
Well, yeah, and exactly.
This is a memorable story. I enjoyed it, even though it was frustrating, but it's supposed to be, because he's frustrated.
Yeah. And I really, like I said, I really like, it's not gimmicky at all because this just kind of like a form and function type of thing. It's like he very much wanted, and there's interviews with him like where he's talking about how he structured it. And he said, I wanted this movie, you know, it's on its surface, like I said, it's just kind of a simple revenge story. But he's like, I thought it would be more interesting to show from the subjective point of view of Leonard Shelby, the main character, who has this condition. So he's like, how can I best put that across and put the audience in the same shoes as him and experience what he's experiencing. And so that's how he decided to do it. And I think it worked really good because, and the cool thing about it too, is that not only is it simulating his condition, but it's also still, even though the story is kind of told in reverse, it still has like a really compelling narrative. Which you wouldn't think because it's not going forward in real time because it's like, oh, well, this stuff has already happened and blah, blah. But the cool thing about it is that you see this scene, like I said, you're in the same shoes as him where he just wakes up in a random hotel room and doesn't remember why he's there or anything or what's going on. And then, like, you get to discover along with him what happened before this, you know, because he doesn't know, you know what I mean? So I think that's, like, a really good... I mean, it was just like a genius fucking way to structure it. Yeah. To be honest with you, as Christopher Nolan, he's made some fucking fantastic movies. I think this is still my favorite. I don't know if I've seen all of them. I think I probably have. But watching it again last night, I was like, shit, man, I forgot how fucking good this movie was.
It's a good movie. I don't know if it's 100% enjoyable. I didn't have a lot of fun watching it. But it was cool. It was very memorable.
Well, you really got to pay attention.
Yeah, I got to pay attention to it, and then it is good at giving you the feeling of fucking not knowing what the fuck is going on, because he doesn't know what's going on. The main character doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah,
he's just doing whatever he can in the moment. And he's reading the stuff and checking for photographs if he's written, and he's going like, "What is this? What am I supposed to do? Did I leave myself a message about this?"
Checking his pockets for Polaroids.
Yeah. Every time he talks to somebody, he says, "We've spoken before, right?" And he's like, yeah, we know each other. Okay, yeah.
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 Yeah, I have a condition. He's like, yeah, you tell me that every single time I see you. Right, because he doesn't remember.
Right.
It's like, that would be, oh my God, that would be hell on earth, that fucking thing. But so, okay, so if you haven't seen the movie, spoiler alert. So what you find out as it goes on. Like you said, the other cool thing about this is how every single scene recontextualizes everything, like, as you go on.
Yeah.
As you said, at the beginning, you're led to believe this is a guy, he's taking revenge on this guy, he finally got him, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. That was his goal, right? And you're like, good for him. He got revenge for, you know, the guy that raped and killed his wife. But then as the story goes on, you start to realize that it's a lot more complicated than that. And the thing about it too, and okay, so I wanted to like poll you guys. Those of you that have seen it, you will know what I'm talking about. So in the black and white bits where he's talking on the phone, they don't tell you at first like who he's talking to on the phone. You don't find out later on in the movie until like, you know, who it is. But he's kind of telling this whole backstory about a guy who had the same thing, anterograde amnesia, whose name was Sammy. And he's like, I investigated this guy back when I was an insurance investigator, and he had to like determine whether he was faking or not to see if the insurance company would pay out his claim. So the whole thing about that story is that there's a whole thing where he's like, you know, the wife, she couldn't really deal with it because there was a seed of doubt planted in her mind, like, was he really faking? And there was a whole thing about it. And I thought that you were, like, led to believe, or you were led to assume at the end that actually, I'm not going to say that there was no Sammy. Like, I think Sammy was a real person, but I think that Leonard was mapping his own shit onto Sammy. Like, I'm not saying that there wasn't a guy named Sammy that had amnesia that he investigated at some point in the past, because he remembered everything before the incident. But then, like, as the movie goes on, you kind of find out there's little details where it could be that a lot of the stuff that he said about Sammy was actually about himself, right? Because Leonard, like, you know, Teddy tells him at the end, Sammy didn't have a wife that had diabetes, that, you know, that he killed with insulin, you know, so it's like, your wife had diabetes. And then he's like, no, she didn't. Like, I would have remembered that. That was before the incident and everything like that. But you're led to believe the wife wasn't murdered. She lived through the attack. She was attacked and she was raped and stuff like that. And it was attempted murder, but she lived.
Okay. I thought she was dead.
No. She lived. Right. And, then, so the whole thing with Sammy like killing his wife with the insulin,
yeah,
Leonard did that. Okay. Because he didn't remember.
He killed the wife.
Yeah,
he killed his own wife.
Right,
and then he's killing other people in
right.
trying to avenge her.
Right.
Okay.
So what they're going along saying that, like I said, as it goes on, it gets a lot more complicated because he's saying that he's deluding himself. He couldn't deal with the fact that he actually ended up killing his wife. Okay. Like he did kill the guy that raped her.
Yeah.
But he had already killed him like a year ago.
Yeah, he was killing.
But he was still looking for the same guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a weird flip.
Yeah, so it's just like I think that you have to see. Here's a weird thing. I watched a couple of other reviews of this and but like most people love this movie. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very lauded movie for a reason. But a little criticism that I saw more than once was some people said, they're like, man, this is a great movie to see like once or twice, but then it loses, like it doesn't have a lot of rewatchability. And I'm like, are you guys high? Yeah. Like, I've seen it three times and I don't know, maybe it would lose its magic or something like that if you watch it over and over, but it's like, to me, it's just the opposite.
What if you were to watch it backwards?
Well, if you buy the Blu-ray,
yeah,
and the DVD, I think, had this too, it does have an option where you can watch it in chronological order.
Okay, yeah.
And actually, earlier on, there are also edits on YouTube. I saw an edit. It's not the whole movie, obviously. It was just kind of key scenes. And he kind of put them in chronological order, like saying like when all the big stuff happened, so it wouldn't wait. But like I said, to me, I saw this in the theater, and I think going in, I think the, you know, I did know the conceit that it was like that the scenes were in reverse order. And if you know that going in, then it's a lot easier to follow. I did not find it difficult to follow at all. I think it does help, though, that there's like an overlap. Like there'll be a scene and then there's like a little bit at the end. And then like the next scene, it'll kind of overlap like a little bit of the same thing again. So you know that that's when that is happening, like in the timeline, but you do actually really have to kind of keep track of it. The reason that they put the black and white thing in there that's going chronologically, because what happens is the black and white scenes are going forward and the color scenes are going backward, and then they meet like right around toward the end where he kills Jimmy, where he strangles that guy in the basement. So that's when the two timelines meet up. But I think that he had the idea to do that just to kind of ground people, because I think even he thought, well, look, if I put the whole thing in reverse order, like that's going to be really frustrating, or people are going to get, or it's going to get really tedious. So he kind of had the black and white scenes as like a backbone, like going through it, that was going forward and would also fill in a lot of the backstory, so you could keep going back to that. So it wasn't just backwards, backwards, backwards the whole time. But, so I think that was like a really, this has been voted like one of the like 100 greatest screenplays like ever by all the screenwriters and everything like that. And you can totally see why, because I watched a couple of videos that were like breaking down the screenplay and everything. And the more you look into all of the detail and all of the thought that went into this, it kind of blows my mind a little bit, like how much thought went into it. And I'm sitting there thinking, Jesus Christ, he must have had like a big whiteboard or something and had like all the fucking shit like drawn all over it, like fucking, I don't know, equations and shit like that, because it's like,
Tammy's asking, didn't he kill his wife by accident?
Yeah, he didn't do it on purpose. But it was just, I thought the implication was the scene where they say that Sammy, you know, he had the same thing and he would forget things after a few minutes, and his wife had diabetes and, you know, she needed an insulin shot. And so she decided, because she thought he was faking or that he could snap out of it. And so she thought the ultimate test would be, you know, I'm going to have him give me my injection. And then like 10 minutes from now, I'm going to back the clock up and say, oh, it's time for my injection again and stuff like that. Because she thought, well, if he's faking, he obviously won't keep doing it because he'll kill me. You know what I mean? But she was like amazed that he kept doing it. Like she would just be like 5-10 minutes later, she turned, time for my shot again. Okay. And he would just do it again. And then she died. You know what I mean? So you're led to assume that Leonard actually did that. Right. But he didn't do it on purpose, obviously, because he can't remember anything. And it's just kind of like, now I'm not saying like all this stuff about all the people that he killed, because you don't actually know. According to Teddy, who may or may not be telling the truth, I assumed that Teddy was the only, even though he's kind of a sleazebag, he seemed to be the only one telling the truth, but that could be wrong too, because deception is like a big theme of this movie.
You can't trust anybody or his memory.
Right, exactly.
His memories, you know, he can't trust his own messages to himself.
Yeah, and it's like, and it's funny because he seems so sure of himself.
Yeah, he said he didn't have a choice, so he may as well just fucking go in there and just act purely on instinct.
Right.
And just go through everything. Mm. So I think he's kind of hopeless. He has to do that.
Yeah.
There's really no other option. Because I was thinking about it watching the movie. I was like, wait a minute, hold on. These little messages would be useless. Because you wouldn't have the context in which you wrote that message.
And that's exactly what this movie portrays.
That's what it's about, yeah.
Because
how could you trust yourself writing that message down?
Because he has this big, there's a great scene with him and Teddy in the diner where he's saying, oh, you know, eyewitness testimony is so, you know, unreliable. Everybody says that. I'm looking for facts, in fact. And he has like all these facts. Every time he gets a fact, he tattoos it on himself so he doesn't forget it. But then as the movie goes on, you figure out that some of those are...
They're not facts.
Are not facts
and they're only like one sentence long. So there's not enough information in there to give the context in which he wrote that down. And you could sit there and just be like, you could analyze it over and over again from all these different ways. And you could never really be sure why you sent yourself that message. Because I was thinking, I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. It's like, well, okay, yeah, this guy, you say, okay, don't listen to this guy. He always lies. But did you actually believe that at that time? And what made you believe that at that time? Did you just think he was lying that one time? You know?
Right.
Because especially when you're saying, well, this message is written by me, and I only have 10 minutes worth of memory.
Yeah.
You know, before it's erased. So I might have been wrong at that time when I wrote that. I might have just thought he was lying.
Yeah.
And I'm writing it down. Now I'm reinforcing that he's lying over and over again.
Well, that and that's
I was thinking that at the time.
That's essentially what he did because, like, when you see at the end when he, you know, has the Polaroid of Teddy, and he, like I said, he makes the very deliberate decision, knowing that he's going to lose his memory about it, to make Teddy his next target.
Yeah.
And that's when he writes on the back of the picture, "Don't believe his lies," because he knows in that moment that whenever he sees that picture
later on, he won't
whatever remember. Teddy tells him, he's not going
to
believe it.
So he's lying to his future self.
Even though Teddy is really, I think, in the movie, the only person that's telling the truth the whole entire time. Because yeah. Carrie Ann Moss is in this too, playing a character named Natalie. And you're initially primed to find her more sympathetic.
Yeah.
But as the story goes on, it turns out she is also a monster
yeah.
who is manipulating him.
Yeah.
And it's and the funny thing about that is that there's a scene where Teddy tells Leonard very deliberately, "Don't trust her." And he writes it on the back of her picture, but then later on he turns over the Teddy picture and says, "Don't believe his lies," and he crosses that out.
Yeah.
But he was right, because she was also manipulating him into doing shit for her.
Yeah, I think he was his friend, actually.
Yeah, even though...
He did try to help him on a bunch of stuff.
I mean, he was a sleazebag, too. I mean, yeah. Teddy's whole thing was he was a cop, yeah. but he was a crooked cop. And he was basically using Leonard as an assassin.
Yeah.
And then they were kind of, like, splitting the money they would get from these drug dealers that he would kill. You know what I mean? That's why it's so great, like, the whole time, like, Teddy keeps bringing up, like, "Where do you think you got that suit? Where'd you get that jag? Like, where are you getting this money from?" And, you know, Leonard is, like, lying to himself about it. It's like, "Oh, I got all this big insurance payout from when my wife died and stuff like that." But that's not where the money's yeah. coming from. But you don't find that out until, like, later on in yeah. the story.
I was looking at that jag. Good thing that you mentioned it. I was looking at that jag while I was watching the movie for you car guys. And I remember how hot those Jags were. You can get those things fucking for nothing now, because nobody wants them. And you would say, "Well, that's a Jaguar. That's a rich man's car. Why would you want?" Because nobody will work on them. And you can get one for a couple grand. And if something goes wrong with it, you could take it to a shop here in Florida. And most of those shops will go, "Nah, we don't work on Jags. You have to find somewhere." And the reason why they're saying no, because they know that you bought that thing for $2,000. And that when they fucking look at that car and they tell you, "Look, this is gonna be a $5,000 repair," you're not gonna do it.
Right.
The repair's more than the fuck what you paid for the car. That's why they depreciate it down to nothing. Do not buy a German or British car. Not here in the US.
Unless you like Unless paying you're rich. Lots and lots of money.
Yeah, and you're your first owner. Yeah. But never buy a used one. All right. You're gonna lose your ass. I wanted to buy this Audi the other day, turbocharged Audi TT, fucking all-wheel drive. I wanted that thing so bad, and fucking
it was
Jamie
cool
was like,
looking.
"Well, I ain't gonna drive it. You're gonna be driving it because of a stick."
Yeah, I'm like, "I'm not driving. I drove a stick. That was my first car." I'm like, "No, yeah, thank you."
I wanted it so bad, but the fucking rational Tom was going, "Don't you fucking dare buy a German car, you fucking asshole!" Yeah. And it's a turbocharged 4. And it's been through so many fucking hands, that thing's just been molested. Fucking, it's gonna burn up, and you can't afford to fix that bitch. You know what I mean? Fucking, it's a good thing I didn't. Not buying that bitch was dodging a bullet. But I wanted it. It was a hot little sports car. It was yeah. a fucking fully loaded fucking Audi TT. In okay condition. For about $5,000. But if they're selling it for $5,000, it's because there's $15,000 worth of work on it.
Yeah, well.
That's why they're selling it for $5,000. Get it. Yeah.
That would have been real dumb if you didn't. Like yeah. I said, well, the whole
fixing that thing because
you
life.
just kept arguing because it's like you wanted it, and I'm like, dude, it's a stick shift. I don't want to yeah. drive a stick shift. I hate stick shift. Like I said, my first car was a stick shift, and I fucking hated it.
I did the right thing, got that Mercury Grand Marquis up the road. Yeah.
But yeah. So I was gonna say that Guy Pearce in this is phenomenal. I think this yeah. is one of my favorite acting performances of his. Interestingly, the role was initially for Brad Pitt. He might have been okay in it. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Brad Pitt's actually a good actor. I don't know, though. I think after Brad Pitt, like, he couldn't do it for whatever reason, like, for scheduling purposes or whatever. And after that, I think they decided, well, maybe it's better to go with a lesser-known actor that's not, because Brad Pitt probably would have cost, like, the whole budget and more. they wanted to go with somebody that was like a good actor, but like not as well known as him. Like, so it would be cheaper, and I guess. I don't know. I can't imagine this movie with Brad Pitt in it, because it just seems like such a small movie, you know?
It's something that Brad Pitt would have probably done, though.
Yeah, well, he wanted to. Yeah. Like I said, he couldn't. And like I said, he was kind of, I guess he was the first choice, so that's who it was first offered to. But, yeah, but he couldn't do it for whatever reason.
Well, it would have been up there with fucking Fight Club.
Yeah. And the thing about it, too, is I really like the guy that plays Teddy, who's, shit, how do you pronounce his name again? I can't remember how you pronounce his name. Joe Pantoliano. And the great thing about casting him, and they actually cast him because he had been in a movie with Carrie Ann Moss, and she recommended him. And the best thing about putting him in this movie is that, as I said, at least from my reading of the movie, he's the Teddy, his character, is the only person in the movie that's telling the truth. But see, that actor always plays like bad guys and sleazebags and stuff like that. So it's almost like it's like you're primed to like not trust him.
Yeah.
And you know, so like I said, there's so many things, there's so many like factors going on in this movie, that kind of play into the whole theme of like delusion and deception and self-delusion. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, Teddy, who's kind of a scuzzbag, he is a scuzzbag. Like, he's using Leonard. He's manipulating him and taking advantage of him just like everyone else is. But he also does seem to be his friend and is helping him. Because the thing about it is that, and they have this big, long discussion toward the end of the movie, which is actually kind of the beginning in the timeline, is that he feels like he's helping him because he's giving Leonard a purpose to his life. Because he doesn't have any memories, you know, he makes the point, he's like, look, even if you killed, he's like, you already killed the guy that raped your wife, and you don't remember it. He's like, I thought you might when it happened, but you didn't. So he's like, at that point, he just decided, I'm just going to use him to, and I'll just like plant clues, and it's like, hey, this is the guy that killed your wife, like go after him, and you can go around playing detective, and it will give you a purpose to your life, like getting revenge. Because another thing that he brings up too is that because Leonard can't make new memories, he can't get past the death of his, we can't mourn her, because it doesn't feel like any time has passed.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how long ago it was. Like, to him, it might as well have been 15 minutes ago. Like, it still feels like that. So, so the fact that he's being used is, you know, by Teddy to go out and do all of this stuff, Teddy feels like he's giving him a purpose because he's giving him what he wants.
Yeah.
He wants to have a purpose. He wants to go get revenge on this person because it makes him feel like his life has meaning.
It's kind of like a really good indie flick that if you like it, you watch it over and over again and look at all the different layers in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Those, hold on. Let's see. The Phantom says, is this film better than Inception?
Yeah.
I like this film better than Inception. I love Inception. But I think the thing about Christopher Nolan, like I said, I love all his movies. I kind of feel like the more, you know, the more he went on and the more accolades he got and stuff like that, like his movies started to get a little long and like maybe slightly self-indulgent. But not, you know, I'm not saying that like to be shitty or anything like that. But, you know, sometimes his movies maybe could have trimmed 20 minutes out. You know what I mean? Just a little bit. This movie, very lean, very mean. It's what, like 95 minutes, however long it is. No, I think it's, actually, I think it's maybe an hour and 40, hour 50, something like that. But it doesn't feel long, like it's really quickly paced. So, honestly,
it's just not the same as Inception.
It's like, really not. It's a completely different, I mean, even though Inception also deals with memories and things of that nature, it's really kind of approaching it from a different angle.
I would put this as like a slightly, it's a different angle of kind of like Fight Club. It's kind of like more along the lines of Fight Club. But it's weirder. It's weirder.
Yeah. I mean,
Fight Club's a little more entertaining and easier to watch. This one for me was, it's kind of work because it keeps, you know what it's doing.
Yeah.
It's just that every scene that you see, you don't really have the back story. Then you get the backstory afterwards, and then you go, okay, yeah, that scene before, he was fucking wrong then. So you're watching a movie backwards.
Yeah.
But I can understand why they did it. They're trying to get you to be as disoriented as the main character. Because he's actually pretty disoriented most, you know, he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
He's just pretending.
I mean, I love that scene where it just pops in the middle and he's running, like, through, like, a mobile home park or something like that. And he's like, okay, why am I running? And then he's like, and then he sees a guy over there, oh, I'm chasing that guy. And then he kind of goes like that. He's, nope, he's chasing me. You know what I mean? It's like, he has no idea, like, from time. And, you know, it does seem, I don't think they ever say, like, what the timeline is, like, for how long it takes before he forgets something. But I thought the very first scene of the movie, which is the actual only scene that's actually shot in reverse with him with the Polaroid, and he's shaking it, but it's, like, fading to nothing. I think that is supposed to be, like, a metaphor for how quickly his memories fade. A
few minutes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm thinking it's, like, 10, 15 minutes tops. Because he says, I think at one point he even explains to somebody, it's like, that he's like, if I have a long enough conversation with you, I'll forget like what we started talking about. Yeah. And I think when he's talking about Sammy in the black and white bits of the film, he says that Sammy couldn't even watch a movie because by the time, you know, he got to the end of the movie, he couldn't remember the beginning of it anymore. So it's like he could only watch commercials because they were short enough to like stay in his memory. But which is, like I said, that would be. And this is a real condition. It does happen, like, people with head injuries and stuff like that. And it's just, I don't know. Like I said, you wouldn't be able to live outside. Like, you wouldn't be able to live on your own. You would have to be monitored.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Because
you need to have a stay-at-home nurse with you.
Yeah, like, at all times. You would have to be, like, constantly supervised. Because
you keep forgetting who that person was.
Yeah, that would be fucking...
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about it is, like, it might not be terrifying for you because you wouldn't realize, I guess. It's kind of like somebody with Alzheimer's, which it's probably not as bad for them because they don't remember shit. It's just, it's bad for everybody around them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it might be the same kind of situation, but it would be pretty freaky, like, just, like, waking up like this poor dude does. Like I said, waking up in, like, weird hotel rooms with some hooker doing blow in his bathroom and be like, he didn't know what's going on. Or like,
he's got a guy tied up in his closet.
Yeah, like a guy with duct tape over his mouth, like in the closet.
He's got a picture of the dude with his name on there. And okay, so that's who that is.
And he's like, he's like, is this my room? What's going on? You know what I mean? And it's just like, that would be fucking, I mean, it's like, it's kind of funny, but in like a really darkly, it's very dark humor, because if that was your real life, that would suck really, really hard. I mean, oh my God, that would be awful. And like I said, I do, and it does seem like everyone around him, like I said, is manipulating him. Even the guy that owns the hotel where he's staying admits to him, it's like, oh, I've been renting you out two rooms because you don't remember anything anyway.
Yeah.
And you can tell him anything.
Yeah.
Because he won't remember it 15 minutes from now. Like, there's that whole fucking scene with him and Carrie Ann Moss where she's just calling him, like, all kind of names and calling his wife a whore and all this other kind of stuff. And she's like, I can say anything I want to, and you won't remember it. Like, you know, I'll come back in here 15 minutes and we'll still be best friends because you won't remember that any of this happened. So you would, yeah, you would absolutely get taken advantage of, which we show in this movie. And like I said, even though Teddy is taking advantage of him too, but he does seem to be the only person that's actually sort of trying to help him, I guess, like in a fucked up sort of way. But and like I said, he does seem to be the only person that's telling the truth. Zach says, I saw LA Confidential last night. That's a great movie too. We should probably review that at some point.
Never heard of it.
You haven't? Oh, you know, oh, it's good.
Okay.
I saw that in the theater too. I always forget Guy Pearce has maybe the world's best cheekbones.
Starvation. Dude could starve himself down to nothing.
Yeah, and he's very wiry in this film.
Although he doesn't have fucking dude to play Tarkin. Fucking what's his name? Fucking the old British actor.
That who? Dude has,
fucking shit.
Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing's cheekbones are fucking straight out of Auschwitz, man. Fucking they were very... that dude is just nothing but fucking. I don't think he had back teeth.
Maybe not.
I think that's part of what it was. I think if you have your back teeth removed, you probably could get that look.
Or maybe it would just be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you. I don't know. Maybe
you have to. Yeah, you have to be skinny and then just have your back teeth pulled out. Fucking.
I guess.
Have your molar. Your what do you call them? Wisdom teeth taken out. And you get older, you might lose a few molars right there. And, yeah.
Phantom says L.A. Confidential is a great action film. Yeah, you would probably really like it. I really liked L.A. Confidential. I haven't seen that in a really long time either, but I believe I also saw that in the theater. CB said Chris Benoit was blacking out and losing time months before he murdered his wife and his kid. He was 40 but had the brain of an 89-year-old with dementia.
Yeah, he had multiple head injuries.
Yeah, that'll do
lots
it.
Lots of them.
Yeah, that'll do it.
I talked about him before.
Yeah, yeah.
There was some people blaming for steroids. No. Steroids kept him alive. One of the things the steroids does is it's an anti-inflammatory. So he was getting hit in the head over and over again with fucking chairs. I've seen videos of it. They really are hitting him with those metal folding chairs. So he was taking massive head trauma over and over again, repeated. But his brain wasn't swelling up, so he wasn't getting bad concussions. He thought he was okay. No, he wasn't. Had he not been on those steroids, he'd fucking got hit in that head. His shit would have swelled up. His fucking head would be fucking rigging, and he'd stop doing it. But he enjoyed his work. He liked to get beat up and put on a good show. I really feel sorry for the guy because they tried to erase him from WWE history when they should have fessed up, said, he was a casualty of the sport, really. But they didn't want to.
I mean, always better to just come out and be honest about stuff like that, because everybody knows and like they're already talking about it.
So. Yeah, that wasn't his fault. It's fucking anybody who'd been beaten the head over and over again like that would do some crazy shit. That's,
I mean, pro tip, don't get a job getting repeatedly beat over the head with stuff. Yeah.
It was another era. Those guys were real famous and fucking kind of living life on top of the world. And they were making a lot of money and having a lot of fun making money. They were part of mainstream pop culture. And I'm sure life was a party for them guys, I guess, you know, but probably a lot of fun.
Until it wasn't.
And he made his fucking career on fucking getting hit with folded chairs and jumping off the top of shit and landing on tables and breaking shit. And fucking, he was pretty good. And it caught up with him. There's limits to what your body can tolerate.
Yeah. I mean, you got a skull and stuff, but... Yeah. You can't fuck with your brain, man. That's kind of where your whole shit is. That's where your whole personality is. You know,
they were making it
up
as they were going along. They didn't have training. They didn't know, you know. They were thinking, well, no, bones are broken. It's okay. They didn't realize that you don't have to break the skull.
No.
All you got to do is just jar it enough to where the brains mash up on the inside of the skull. And just hit, the brains are hitting the front of your damn skull all the time with the sides. And it'll bruise up.
Yep.
All right. Now, if you're jacked, you're on a bunch of fucking roids, you're not going to have a lot of swelling in the brain, so you won't have the side effects that from concussions or, you know, fucking, you just won't feel them, you know, because the brain didn't swell up. So it actually kind of protected his brain in one way. But without the shit, the swelling would have warned him that he was fucking pushing it, you know what I mean? He didn't end up in the hospital. He says, look, man, you can't hit yourself in the head like that too many times with a fucking chair. You know, it goes without fucking thinking. You know, it goes without saying. But you got these young guys on all that testosterone and shit, and they're having fun. They're going to try to fucking be maximum, to do the maximum extreme shit.
Comes back and bites you in the ass,
though.
Yeah,
came back and got him.
Well, in this case, it came back and bit his whole entire family.
Casualties, yeah.
So.
It was like that dude in that clock tower who shot all those people. You know, his fucking brain had a huge-ass fucking tumor in it. That wasn't him. It was just malfunction. It was a natural disaster. Dude went crazy.
It's really, yeah, that really is a shame. The Phantom said, good news, Jenny. I just came across an all-region Blu-ray version on eBay of the film When the Lights Went Out. Oh, yeah, I've been wanting to see that. About the Black Monk of Pontefract haunting. The English film for $20. Yeah, I might have to, like, pick that up at some point because we did a show about the Black Monk a while back, but I never did get around to seeing that movie. So I was kind of hoping somebody had uploaded it to YouTube, but I couldn't find it. But that was a while back that I checked. But yeah, so, I mean, I'm, like I said, I was reluctant, like, because we were looking for a movie last night, and I was just, like, scrolling through all the stuff, and I'm like, God damn it, and it's like, I couldn't decide on anything, and I wasn't in the mood for anything. And then I remembered, I was like, oh yeah, I wanted to show Tom Memento and see what he thought of that. But like I said, I didn't show him it before because I know how he is with, like, because he just likes real straightforward type movies. And I said, well, it's in reverse order, so you kind of got to pay attention. But like I said, to me, it didn't, it's, I don't think it's hard to follow. Like, as long as you know that that's what's going on, then, and as long as you kind of pay attention to the context clues and stuff, it's, I don't find it particularly hard to follow. But, and honestly, like, it seems like most people didn't either. And a lot of the, you know, the production companies or the distribution companies that didn't want it to start with because they thought it would be too confusing. Like, when it was a big hit, they were like, oh, well, I guess we're stupid then. It's like,
they kind of are. You just have to take risks with quality. If it's quality, you can get away with a lot of shit. Like, if this was a low budget or poorly written movie, I wouldn't have tolerated it because it's a little difficult to watch. But it, the quality was real good, and I understood why they were doing it.
Yeah. And I think it was really effective. I think it was really effective to, like, get across.
Yeah, they wanted me to be in the same world as Guy Pearce's character.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, disoriented.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was effective. It was good. So the audience cut it a lot of slack because they were like, okay, this is a good movie. It's just doing it a little bit differently. You got to pay attention. You got to work. You can't just sit back and relax.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a ride at Disneyland like a lot of, like a big tentpole movie. You got to fucking keep shit straight. But
I like that, though.
Yeah, and it was a driving, it was a good story, too.
Yeah.
If it was a boring story, then that format wouldn't have worked.
It's not boring at all. There's, like, lots of murders and car chases and shootouts and all that kind of stuff. And like I said, it's really, it's paced really fast, you know what I mean? And you're in every new scene, which is just 10, 15 minutes long or whatever, you know, there's, like, a new little mystery to solve. Because you're, like, because he turns up and he's just, like, he doesn't know where he is. And you're, like, well, how the fuck did he end up in this situation? You know what I mean? And then you kind of go on and find out, like, how that happened. And then the next scene comes and you're, like, oh, okay, that's how he got into that situation.
Yeah.
So it's, like, so it's like, reverse suspense, but it's still suspense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though it's, like, not forward.
Yeah, and then as you go back in time to see what this started, it ends up being reveals because you were wrong about what you thought had happened.
Just like he was.
Just like he was, yeah.
Just like he was.
Right.
So I think that was, like, again, I think this was, like, a genius script. I mean, I think what he did was, you know, obviously the easiest way to do this would be to write it in chronological order and then rearrange it, you know, and, like, do it backwards and make sure it all made sense and everything like that. But it just, the fact that he had the intelligence to structure it that way and still make it a compelling narrative with suspense, even though you had essentially already seen what was going to happen, like, was just, I mean, this is really one of the best screenplays probably ever written, I think. Zach said, have you guys ever seen Once Upon a Time in America? Sergio Leone movie. Yes. So I've seen it one time.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. But yeah, Tom has it. He has, like, a lot of the spaghetti westerns.
I didn't finish it, though. I saw, started in the beginning, and I got interrupted and then just never went back to it. I'll go watch it. There's two different versions of it. The theatrical version and then an extended version. I was watching the extended version. I probably should see the theatrical release first, probably.
That's probably the best way to go about things, I kind of feel like. Which, you know, we had that discussion when we were talking about Dark City that, you know, we just went ahead and watched the director's cut because I'd already seen the theatrical cut, but you said you probably would have liked to see the theatrical cut.
The theatrical version was kind of meandering. You know, it wasn't real. The extended version was kind of meandering. So I probably would like the theatrical cut better first. Another one I wanted to see that was called, what is that? Two Fists of Dynamite? Or Fistful of Dynamite? I think that I watched. Those would be pretty good, too.
Yeah, because you kind of went off on a spaghetti western kind of kick for a while. So he bought, like, a bunch of the movies.
Yeah, I got them.
Yeah.
I don't have Fistful of Dynamite, though.
Yeah. Zach said the extended version is the real version. The theatrical version got cut all to hell.
Oh, it did?
And caused a ton of plot holes.
Okay.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
All right.
It's not always true that the director's cut is better than the theatrical cut.
Okay.
But you have to know the context of who was it that cut it, like, for what reasons did they cut it, what did they cut out, you know, stuff like that. Because sometimes the director's cut, like, sometimes they put everything back in and it probably didn't need to be in there. But usually I default to the director's cut, but that's not always the case.
Really liked the Man with No Name trilogy, you know.
Yeah.
That was really good.
I like those as well.
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. We reviewed some of those, didn't we?
Yeah. I don't think we ever really... What was great about Sergio is Sergio understood how important the score was. All right? And his Westerns had epic fucking scores that just elevated those movies. It wasn't just, you know... And he also called it when it came to kind of like the post-apocalyptic feel of the Old West in certain areas, especially along that Mexican border, you know. Because the land was changing hands, or had changed hands. And it was, you know, now the United States, and there's old, dilapidated, you know, Spanish missions and shit there, you know. And it was just a good way of showing it. Pretty cool. The end of one world, the beginning of another. So, it was almost like a Mad Max movie in a way.
Yeah. And that's probably how he was thinking of it, end of one world and start of another one.
Yeah. Yeah, so he called it. That's kind of the way it was if you go back and read about what it was like. Not everywhere at all times, just that particular region of the Old West. The Southwest was like the apocalyptic times.
Yeah. All right, so are we... You were ready to wrap it up or what?
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we're going to wrap up this review. Thanks, everybody, for dropping by. Hopefully, you guys can come around on Wednesday for the main show. Overwhelmingly, what won in the poll this time was we're going to talk about good old Rosalind Norton, otherwise known as the Witch of King's Cross. She was an Australian occultist, associate of Aleister Crowley. So she seemed like a pretty cool chick, so we're going to be talking about her on Wednesday night. I don't remember who it was that recommended that, but it won overwhelmingly in the poll this week. So, and she seems like a fascinating character. So we're going to talk about her. I think there's a documentary about her on Amazon Prime, too.
Which is it again?
Rosalind Norton. I don't know. She's like an occultist from Australia. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to be talking about that on Wednesday night. So hopefully you guys can join us for that. And have a good rest of your evening, you guys. And we'll see you guys again on Wednesday night. Good night.